There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is the original. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. That guy, well, that's Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim, and welcome to another creepy edition of Supernatural News and Parashare.
Hiya.
I hear to start today's show, you're a little bent out of shape by a certain late night TV show host, Tim.
Boy, am I ever. And let me tell you something, Dave. I've actually paid for tickets to go see this guy in concert. I'm actually a fan, but I'm a little perturbed. You know, I finally get it now, Dave. I get it why comedians get upset about stealing bits.
Who? Chlamydians?
No, I said comedians.
Are those people with chlamydia?
Oh, I said comedians.
Comedians. Okay, sorry. I got misunderstood you there for a second. My ears are plugged.
Comedians.
Or I'm focused on chlamydia. One or the other.
Well,
yeah. So what's going on, brother?
Okay, so Monday night, I'm sitting there, I'm watching my TV. And I like the Seth Meyers. I like him. You know, some people don't like him because of his political slant. I think he's funny. That it's an acquired taste. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you know, I have this bit. I've had this bit for years. Some people don't understand it about how, you know, the Pope has an Italian accent, even though he's from Argentina. Some people don't get that bit. They just don't.
Whenever we talk about the Pope talking about UFOs or the Pope talking about exorcism, Tim does what I believe to be a pretty spot on imitation. Like, all right, the Pope has just announced that McDonald's is the work of Satan and he's against McNuggets. We've got that audio right now. Let's hear it, Tim.
I don't like McNuggets, Dave. They the work of Satan.
Right.
So right.
We've been doing this for what, 15, 16 years.
Yeah.
No matter what Pope, what religion, they're all Catholic, but what background or ethnicity they are, they all end up sounding like bad Mario and Luigi imitations.
Exactly. You know why? Right. Why? I've always said, Dave, the reason why is because it's like living in Kentucky. No matter how long you've lived there, you pick up the accent. So it doesn't matter if you're from Germany. It doesn't matter if you're from Argentina. It doesn't matter where you're from. You pick up the accent.
Okay. All right. So what's going on?
So I'm sitting there and I'm watching Seth Meyers. Well, the Pope had a colon surgery, right? So they're kind of making fun of the fact that the Pope had a surgery, but they made it seem like the Pope had a facelift. So half of this joke is visual, okay? So I'll set that up. So that the first half of this joke is a visual joke, in which they say the Pope had surgery this week and boy, he kind of looks, you know, he looks better than ever, in which they show a visual of the Pope looking like 50 years younger. Okay. We're going to play the clip now so you can get an idea of what exactly Seth says. Then he steals my bit, Dave.
All right, let's hear it.
All right, here it is.
Pope Francis made his first public appearance yesterday since undergoing surgery a week ago, and looks like the procedure went well. No, there was none of that. He's not Italian. I think, you know, you spend enough time in the Vatican, you start talking like that no matter where you're from. No, I went in for kidney stones.
See?
Is he also sounds like he's channeling his inner David Spade. I got to be honest with you.
Maybe. Well, I mean, they did work together around the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to cry about it. It sounded like I was starting to cry about it, but I mean, he took my bit.
It did. It did. It's okay. Come here. Sit in my lap and I'll hold you.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I mean, he does have Minnesota ties. It's completely, completely feasible that he came to town. He listened to the show. He went, "Hey, that's a really funny bit."
Because Dave and Tim, those guys are clever. We're not going to pay them. We're going to use this.
Right. Yeah. He just had 2 weeks off of the show. He could have came to Minnesota, spent a little time up on the lake with his brother, Josh.
Sure. Yeah, maybe.
Two of them were hanging out, and he goes, "Hey, you know what? That Pope Vatican bit, that's pretty good. I like that."
Could be. I mean, probably not, but it could be. I'm not sure. Well, we've got some news stories. We've got some emails, and obviously Tim's going to fester about Seth Meyers and his cheating ways. But good morning, Dave and Tim.
Morning.
After listening to the episode with Siobhan Smith, I had an interesting thought. She repeatedly stated that when people commit suicide, that it was predetermined, which I can fully accept. But here's my ponderment. Is that a word,
Tim? No, it's not.
I like it, though. I think it should be.
Okay.
Many people talk about hearing voices telling them to hurt themselves or kill themselves. We classically chalk this up to possession or oppression. But what if it's neither? Could those voices saying end it actually be our higher self calling out and basically saying, this is your end of life alarm clock? I don't know why I suddenly went into this weird Shatnery and pausing, but could this be your end of life alarm clock? That's an interesting aspect. It's time to check out and return to spirit. I don't doubt that some people do honestly have demons, but as you've said before, is it really worth a demon's time to go break Aunt Edna's favorite plate? Or in this case, is it really worth their time to get that person to end their life without any pomp and circumstance? If they already have it written in their Akashic record that suicide will be their exit strategy. Just something to think about. Thanks for all the great topics. Darkness Radio remains my Monday morning wake-up routine as I get my get ready for work and get the week started. That comes from Ed. The only problem I would have with that, Ed, is listen, I hear that voice a lot. And I'm just going to be open with people on it. You know, as much as I've said, suicide, was something when I was younger I attempted, and thankfully I'm still here for it. When you face depression and deal with depression and anxiety, a lot of times you still deal with those aspects. And in all honesty, there are days that I hear that voice telling me it's time to go. So if it really is the alarm clock from the other side, am I just doing to that alarm clock what I do to every alarm clock I ever set, just hitting the snooze button? I don't know. I mean, it's definitely an interesting concept. It's an interesting thought. I think the concept has always been behind demons breaking you and taking your soul. The dogmatic version is that when you kill yourself, it is an affront to God and a sin. So the concept has always been you don't go to heaven when you commit suicide. So the demons always want to shatter or break you so that they can claim your soul. But as we've talked on the show, I just have a hard time believing that God would allow somebody mentally incapacitated making choices that are medically not sound to go to hell. That's something I don't believe in.
And beyond that thought too, the idea that God always forgives a sin, even if the sinner were mentally incapacitated to ask to be forgiven for that sin. I would think that would be the last divine act that God would do. Wouldn't you think?
Yeah. That would be my thought, but I don't know. The world is a strange place. What our beliefs and understandings are just a fragment of our experience. And I'm not sure what it all means in the end.
Go ahead. Finish that thought.
I just wanted to say the one thing though. I don't open up about my depression looking for Aw Dave's or Poor Dave or We Love You Dave. I appreciate those messages that you guys send me when I open up about these things. But I want hopefully other listeners and people out there that hear these voices and hear these experiences to not feel alone, to realize it does afflict and affect all of us in one way, shape, or another. And that I'm not above it as well. I'm Christian. I have a very strong faith. I fight depression and anxiety in the face of what others would consider a gifted life. I've got a wonderful family, a wonderful job, good friends. Why would you want depression? Why would you feel anxiety? It doesn't make any sense. I know that's the conundrum that is depression and anxiety. But I will say this, I hear those voices. I hear the call to end it all from time to time. Even after a great day with my family, sometimes I'll hear that nagging voice. I don't know. Is it the dark side trying to get you to succumb? Is it your own mind just feeling tired? There are days I just feel tired. And that sometimes seems when I'm more susceptible to it. But remember, you can choose to not take that call, to hit that snooze alarm, if you will, and continue to live. That's what I keep doing, and that's what I hope I'll be able to do until my natural end happens, and not by my own hand. So just for those of you that are fighting and feeling alone, or that this is something that only happens to you, I promise you it does not. And I also want people to be clear, I'm not hearing voices, Tim. It's like, I don't.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's not that kind of thing. It's the nagging of depression, those voices.
Right. So go ahead. If I could, I did commit a small sin, and I got to apologize to Ed. Ponderment is a word. I was just being snippy.
Wow.
Yeah. It's actually it's defined by Merriam-Webster's dictionary as the action of pondering or deep thought, or the twitching of a facial muscle now and then to show ponderment. So if Ed is twitching at that, don't twitch. It's not that serious. But yeah.
Boy, you went all out on that. Hi-o, heidi-ho, D&T. That's how this one starts off.
Hiya.
D&T. I like that.
D&T.
Hi.
I think, all right. D&T was a bad metal band back in the 80s.
Actually. Were they?
Well, it's Y&T. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Y&T. Yeah. When I was a kid, there was a guy who came to our town and had some sort of paranormal ghost type event. I can't remember his name. Anyway, he asked everyone in the audience if anyone had ever seen a ghost. 3/4 of the people raised their hands. Then he asked if anyone had ever talked to a ghost. Maybe 1/4 of the people raised their hand. Next, he asked if anyone had ever had sex with a ghost. Only an old farmer that I knew as Farmer Bob raised his hand. The host asked him to come up on stage. He asked Farmer Bob to tell his story about having sex with a ghost. And Farmer Bob said, "Oh, ghost. What the hell? I thought you said goat. I thought you said goat. I figured I'd try to make you guys laugh. You're always making me laugh. Thank you for doing what you do." And that comes from Mr. Hanky, it says, Tim. Mr. Hanky.
The Christmas pool.
Heidi ho.
That's right. Now the heidi ho makes sense to me.
Yeah.
All right.
See?
Yeah. Fascinating, fascinating. Speaking of fascinating, haunted in Havana, Unana, there is the Strange Escapes event this weekend at the Belvoir Winery in Liberty, Missouri. I will be a part of that event along with Amy Bruni, Adam Berry, the lovely and talented Cindy Keza, John Tenney, Greg and Dana Newkirk, Aaron Sagers, Chris Williams, and Greg Lawson. It is a full weekend event. Lots of fun. There are 10 tickets that remain for the event. The link for those will be on today's show guide, or just go to darknessevents.com. Darknessevents.com. Click it and ticket. I think that's the way to say it, Tim. No, click it and ticket.
That's a safety belt deal.
Click it or ticket is the safety belt. Yeah, click it and ticket in this one. So you can come on out, hang out with us at the Odd Fellows home, the Belvoir Winery. It's an amazing place. We always have weird experiences there with the supernatural. I hope you will all come out and ghost hunt and have a fun time with us. Again, darknessevents.com is the website to find more information about that. I also want to mention, Tim, Fright Club. Fright Club is looking for some interesting footage. If you have witnessed a cryptid, a UFO, a ghost, any other strange phenomena, and you have it on video, photographs, EVP, send it to dave@darknessradio.com. I'm helping them to find new evidence to share with the new season. So please feel free to email it to me along with your name, your phone number, and best email address to reach you on. and a short blurb, like a paragraph or so about it, just to forward on to them so that they know what they're looking at and where it came from. So if you're interested, email it to dave@darknessradio.com. They're looking for all types of strange phenomena, things moving on their own, disembodied voices, shadowy figures, creepy stuff. We want to hear it. We want to see it. So make sure that you reach out and share it with us. Now, Tim.
Yes.
Tim.
Yes.
Last year, mm-hmm. I had a journey, an ayahuasca journey.
Yes, you did.
And it was pretty remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
I was blown away by it. It lifted me. It made me feel better about life, death, and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I talked a little bit about the depression in that call. I think it's why it's even more dampened down for me now, is because of that journey. And it was just really amazing. Well, mm-hmm. Megan Fox took a trip as well. She took a little journey.
Really?
So while appearing on Jimmy Kimmel Live on Monday, the 35-year-old actress opened up to guest host Arsenio Hall about drinking ayahuasca with Machine Gun Kelly while the couple was in Costa Rica on a recent trip. She goes on to say, "So we went to Costa Rica to do an ayahuasca in a proper setting with indigenous people," Fox said, referring to the psychoactive tea, which is used as a spiritual medicine and can cause hallucinations. "So I was thinking I was like glamping, like it was going to be some kind of five-star experience. But you get there and you really are in the middle of the jungle, and you don't get to eat after 1 p.m. You have to walk a very far distance to get your water, and you can't shower because they're in a drought," she continued. "There was nothing glamorous about this, and it's all part of making you vulnerable, so you sort of surrender to the experience." Fox then recalled how the preparations for the spiritual ceremony began by having herself and Kelly, 31, and 20 other strangers line up together to induce vomiting.
Hmm.
My version was much, much better. I didn't have to do any of that shenanigans. Though the actress said she and her rocker beau had reservations about throwing up, which she described as a necessary step, the Transformer star called it such a good bonding experience overall. Right. I mean, Tim and I bonded in college many times over a lot of copious drinking and vomiting. So I see that. That gets you ready. And then you go into the ceremony that night because you're like, my vanity is gone. I've just done this in front of all these strangers, and now I'm ready to really open up, the Till Death star said. When it came to the actual ceremony and drinking the ayahuasca, Fox said the experience went on for 3 nights and was incredibly intense. "Everybody's journey is different, but on the second night, I went to hell for eternity," Fox recalled. Does that mean she continued to make more Transformers movies?
Yes.
Yeah. "Just knowing it's eternity is torture in itself because there's no beginning, middle, or end. You have a real ego death." When Hall, 65, asked how she identified the experience, Fox said that the beverage helped her open up in a way that talk therapy or hypnotherapy could not. And I would agree with that 100%. "It just goes straight to your soul, and it takes you to a psychological prison that you hold yourself in," she explains. "So it's your own version of hell, and I was definitely there." Fox and Kelly have been going strong ever since they were first spotted out together in May of 2020. Blah, 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 blah. Shit I don't care about. And that's it. They went out and she went to hell for eternity.
Huh.
Tim.
Well.
Hell for eternity. That doesn't make having an ayahuasca journey sound pleasant to me. Not at all. But my version, I had a great time. Loved it.
Well, let's play a little what if game here. Uh-huh. Now, what if you have the... What if the opposite happened? What if you had the Megan Fox experience? What if you down the ayahuasca and all of a sudden you didn't have such a great experience? What if it ended up a little different?
I think it depends on what you do and the intent you go in on. Now, when I was led through GK, Madre talked to me. She said, "What is the intent? What are you bringing to this? What's your word?" And mine was forgiveness. And I had that trip. I mean, going in to the next one, I've been thinking, I'm like, would I want to know about aliens? What would I find? And again, are you engaging that center of your imagination that then the hallucinatory effects are going to show you aliens? I don't know. I don't know what her facilitator told her. I've heard from some that do the indigenous ayahuasca that the first journey is remarkable. The second journey is often hellish. The third journey is remarkable again. You have to go through that second journey to purge, blah, blah, blah. But in talking to the facilitators I dealt with and the master that I worked with going through mine, it wasn't about that. And it's a different form. It's a different way to do it. Just like I didn't have to vomit and I didn't have to poop myself. I mean, I could have if I wanted to. They weren't against it, but that's not what they do with this. It's pure. It was truly beautiful, man. I've recommended a few people to it. We've had so many listeners write to me asking how they could find a practitioner in their area. And I'd forwarded their emails to GK to see if she could help out. But it's pretty remarkable. And, you know, they can be expensive. The journeys can be $400 or $500, but you're getting the medicine and you have a facilitator who stays with you for the 3 or 4 hours to make sure that you're okay. And walk you through the experience.
It may seem like a dumb question, but did they tell you to bring a change of clothes?
No, because she told me you are not going to poop yourself or vomit. That was my key element when I was invited to this. I'm like, no interest. I because of my stomach surgery, I can't throw up. I just go through the racking, debilitating pain of dry heaving. Mm-hmm. I've because of the stomach, I throw down. If you get my drift, and I had no interest in that. And she said, no, that doesn't happen. This isn't the same thing that you would deal with if you were out in the rainforests. We've had guests on that have talked about it. We've had friends that have done that and have pooped themselves or puked all over themselves. That's not what this was about. I really prefer GK's methodology, and it's, trust me, it took me to places. Here's what I would say. After that experience, I thought, that's great. I never need to do that again. That was remarkable. And within a few weeks, I was like, wow, I want to do that again. And I do. And even if I thought there's going to be a hellish segment to part two, I don't think that would deter me. Because when you're in it, Tim, it is such an interesting experience that is so all-encompassing. That there were moments of fear and trepidation, but it was more just because I feared the unknown and what would come next. But each element taught me. Each element brought me something new and intriguing. And I lived through the eyes of animals. It was remarkable, man. I don't know. I can't get into it any more than that. It was really beautiful. And I would even consider if they said, oh yeah, well, the second one is more hellish, I would consider doing it because I'd wonder what could I learn from that experience. And, you know,
see,
I would be interested in it, but I honestly don't believe that that's the case because I've been offered to go back and they've never once said, oh, by the way, you should be aware of the fact the second journey can suck. And they've never told me that. It's just what I bring to it and what the facilitator helps you go through.
The only thing I can think of that hellish experience that they're talking about or she's talking about having is a lack of depth of the soul or a lack of just being, you know what I mean? Like she went into it looking for some sort of meaning to her life and needed a good ass kicking, I guess, and got it. That's the only thing I can think of.
Right. Well, and let's face it. There's been a lot of reports. She has not been one of the nicest people in the world on set or to fans. So maybe this was a egotistical ass kicking she needed.
Yeah. That's the only thing I can think of.
I lead such a pure, innocent life, Tim. I'm sure it's just going to be filled with rainbows and daisies.
I'm sure the next one, you're probably going to get your taint licked by a unicorn. But it's probably just going to be 3 hours of taint licking by a unicorn. But, you know, why not try it a second time? Sure.
I don't know. If that, I'll tell you what. Hellish experience or taint linked by unicorn, licked by a unicorn. I think I would pass on the taint licked by unicorn and go with the hellish experience.
Well, there is a horn there on the unicorn.
Right, that's so my fear is, you know, if he's licking, am I getting poked in the...
You might get the fart box punctured, but, you know, there's that. God.
Kids are listening to the show. Our next story is about a Roman centurion ghost said to haunt a Chichester pub, Tim.
Yeah, that too.
Chichester pub, Chichester, Chichester pub. I don't know, UK people, you guys and your stupid words. The Chichester Inn in West Street sits just inches away. That's hard to say, man. The Chichester Inn in West Street sits just inches away.
Is it
from
is
the city's ancient walls? The guy who wrote this is an asshole. Just let me say that up front. The Schistischer Inn in West Street sits just inches away from where the city's ancient walls are and where the west gate of the city once stood. Those familiar with Schistischer's rich history will know that more than 900 years ago, a Roman centurion might have been a common sight in the area. But in the year 2021, it's a very different type of Roman that's rumored to exist there. The ghost of a Roman centurion is said to haunt the watering hole as it continues to patrol the city call for the simple reason that it was never told to stop. The pub has been approached on numerous occasions by paranormal investigators who have endeavored to prove the apparition's existence, but the closest they have ever gotten reportedly is hearing a bar stool rattle in the early hours of the morning. My kids hear that at home all the time, but it's usually me farting, Tim. While Lord Nick Webb says he has not witnessed anything himself, he keeps an open mind. He said, "We've had a few inexplicable electrical issues, like equipment turning itself on. We've also had some of those paranormal investigators talking about the presence of an orb, Tim."
No.
Customers say that they've seen it, especially when they're drunk. The centurion is supposed to be patrolling the old city walls because no one ever told him to stop. And the pub sits just about 1 meter inside the city walls and right next to what would have been the West Gate. Potentially, if he's still around, he can walk through the bar. "I keep an open mind, but I've never seen anything. Some people are more perceptive to these sorts of things. My ex-partner was quite interested and into these things, and she reckons she was woken up at 4:23 a.m. every day by the sounds of latches rattling in a room in the loft." Interesting. So ghosts of Roman centurions from Schistischer, Tim.
I think I got it for you here, Dave. Hold on a second here.
Chichester.
That's what I said. Schistischer.
Chichester.
Chichester.
Yeah, Chichester Inn in West Street. Chichester inches away from where the city's ancient walls are.
It's Chichester.
And where the west gate of the city once stood.
It's Chichester, Dave.
Oh, God, we're old men. You know that, don't you? Yeah. We're just old, old men.
Yeah.
All right, Tim, here's another one. Burrillville farmhouse, subject of a new film set for a July release. The house that gained international attention following the release of a 2013 horror movie inspired by reports of famed paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren is the focus of a new film to be released this week. Sleepless Unrest premiered at Wildly Theater in Edwardsville, Illinois on Friday, July 2nd, a film directed by Kendall and Vera Welpton about their two-week stay on Round Top Road in Harrisville. The Welptons reportedly stayed at the house made famous by the hit horror movie The Conjuring, with cast members Brian Murray and Rachel Stratton from Ghost Hunters on A&E. A small team of filmmakers and paranormal investigators move into the house that inspired The Conjuring films to document paranormal activity for a solid 2 weeks. Note promos on the film. Is the real-life Conjuring home still haunted? Kendall Welpton is known for work on The House in Between, Ghost Hunters, Wicked Tuna, and Battlefish. The group reportedly had 14 cameras rolling 24 hours a day during the two-week stay, producing a one-hour, 20-minute film that was highlighted earlier this month on Fox Morning News. The film officially premieres in theaters and on video on demand Friday, July 16th. That's this week from Gravitas Ventures. Corey and Jennifer Heinzen, who bought the house in 2019, attended the movie premiere. The Heinzens, paranormal investigators originally from Maine, have branded the house, built in 1766, the farm on Round Top Road. I think the Conjuring house flows a little bit easier.
Yeah. It's a little scarier. The Conjuring house, it brings a certain je ne sais quoi. The what'd you call it? The farm top goat getter.
The farm on Round Top Road.
Yeah.
The farm on Round Top Round. I wonder if they meant Round Top Road. I don't know. Opening the 8.5-acre property tours and overnight investigations. Over the past 2 years, it's been the subject of a ghost adventure special and featured everywhere from the New York Post to People Magazine. Their website, theconjuringhouse.com, shows a 7-day-a-week schedule with most dates booked at a cost of just $125 per night per person through the end of the year. Sleepless Unrest can currently be pre-ordered through iTunes for just $6.99. I had a chance to sit down with Brian Murray and Rachel Stratton this weekend, Tim.
Oh.
They are two of the sweetest people in the paranormal field.
Yep.
We had such a great time hanging out, talking, having drinks, hanging out at the Duluth, Minnesota Para Unity Conference. It was great. Absolutely great. I think they're going to be at the Las Vegas one. They're wonderful. Just such sweet people. I want to get them on the show. I already invited them to come on and talk about Sleepless Unrest. Hopefully we'll have them on next week to talk about the movie, their experiences, and the rest. So keep tuning into the Best in Paranormal Podcasting for that update and interview coming up. See, Tim, it's a little bit, well, what I like to call a tease.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't call it a tease. Everybody does. Hi, Dave. Thanks for letting me email you. I've had a lot of paranormal experiences over the years, starting when I was 8. I was sitting on the kitchen counter next to the sink with my legs crossed, and something picked me up as gentle as can be and put me on the floor. It was like I was floating through the air, but it never scared me. My dad thought it was my grandma, his mom, and I knew there was ghosts, but the worst experience I had was when I was with my ex, and we were in bed, and she was raped by an unseen force. It was like a force field around her. I couldn't get it away, and I was thrown off the bed, and to be honest, it scared me. I've been scratched. I've been in beds that have been shaken. I've come face to face with four shadow figures at once, and I stared them down. I've been chased up Arthur's Seat, an extinct volcano in Edinburgh, Scotland, when I was a kid. I was with my aunt and her friend, and a shadow figure chased us, and I didn't run. I just watched it, and it vanished into thin air. I've also had my elbow pulled and my toes played with, and I've been through a lot of in my life that no one should have to go through, but it's made me stronger. I had a bleed on the brain last year. I want to become a paranormal investigator because I have no fear now. And if there's something that's really powerful, there's no point running because it'll just lock you in. So I don't see the point in running. I love your program, The Holzer Files. Some amazing episodes. If you ever want another member of your team, I'd be more than willing. Thank you again for letting me email and keep in touch. Keep up the good work. That comes from Darren Smith. Thank you, Darren Smith. What an interesting story.
Yeah.
Very bizarre. Man, could you imagine that? If you're in bed with your loved one and they are being sexually abused by a spirit and you keep getting rebuked, you're like getting bounced off, you can't get near them, you can't help. I can't imagine what that'd be like.
Yeah, that'd be a terrifying experience, that's for sure.
Absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
Abso-freaking-lutely, Tim. Before we go to break, let's talk about Surreal Estate. When it comes to unique TV shows, sci-fi often delivers, and their latest offering, Surreal Estate, might be our new favorite thing, according to this article. So what is it about, this new series that has us ready for the premiere on July 16th? Honestly, there are multiple answers to that question. Not only do we get to see Tim Rosin back on our screens after the end of Schitt's Creek, we missed you, Mutt, but this is also an amazing series for those of us who love ghost stories and house flipping shows. This is like HGTV meets American Horror Story and Haunting of Hill House. It's ghosts and real estate. And if that doesn't scream must watch, I don't know what does. Then again, the name of the show is Surreal Estate, and that feels rather fitting, too. While we have not seen a lot about this series beyond the trailer itself, we are here for the ghosts, the metaphysical, and the fact that this is a group of realtors dealing with both the paranormal and the real people who want to buy and sell homes. There's something to be said for the sci-fi way, leaning into our love of HGTV programming and buying and selling homes and then giving it a paranormal twist. From what we can see, the series looks like it will be just as much fun as the real estate flipping as it was ghost hunting. Of course, the fact that Rosin, I don't know his name, is the lead of the series, or at the very least, the owner of the real estate agency is a big draw as well. And finding out that we can apparently sense the ghosts in these homes and even commune with them in some way was the detail that sealed the deal. Seriously, this series sounds so good. It also sounds ridiculous, and I'm totally here for that too. So Surreal Estate comes to the Sci-Fi Channel this Friday, July the 16th, 2021. For those of you time travelers wondering what episode you're listening to. Interesting stuff. You know, I actually, and this is no joke, Tim, with Echo Bodine and mm-hmm. Jeff Belanger, mm-hmm. Mally Fox, we actually shot a sizzle reel for a paranormal real estate show about 10 years ago.
Really?
Yeah, we did. It was weird. It was definitely a weird story. We were trying to see if we could figure out what was wrong, why this house was haunted, and clear the spirit so that the family could sell the house. and it didn't get picked up at the time. They just, there's been many different variations of that show that's been sold. I think I've had probably 15 production companies come to me with that pitch, and I've sent them the sizzle reel I already did for it. And I like the sizzle reel. But if it's any indication, halfway through the filming of it, Jeff Belanger said, I don't want to do this. It was just because it was so bizarre. And we were dealing with a family that was going through a lot and had some dysfunctionality. And it was bizarre. But I think it got very real for him in the fact that this isn't just going in and ghost hunting the Queen Mary or Eastern State Penitentiary. But when you start dealing with families, that's a whole new level of responsibility you have to take on.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a break. We have a new Theater of the Mind coming up. We've got more of your stories, more news. That's right here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. I'm Dave. That's Tim. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the show. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Folks, I need your help. I need your prayers, your positivity, your good thoughts, because tonight I'm seeing Springsteen live on Broadway. Tim, I'm so excited about this. I can't even begin to tell you.
Yeah, you should be. Yeah.
Springsteen live on Broadway. My hopes are, I've seen pictures of him afterwards signing autographs and meeting and greeting people when he did this before. So I'm kind of hoping I can get that opportunity. But Miss Springsteen's first tour on Broadway. He is one of the first to come back to help reopen Broadway. And I was able to get tickets for Winifred and myself. And we're there today. We're going to be at the concert tonight. Tomorrow I fly home and then immediately fly to the Belvoir Winery. So there is no live video show this week. We will be back doing some live shows next week. So thank you for understanding and your patience. I mean, they're bonus episodes. You can't get mad that we're not delivering them. But I just wanted you to know that I enjoy doing those. So I'll be back and we will be doing more of those as we go along. So keep tuning in. And we've got some guests coming back to visit with us next week, Tim, that we've had on before. And I promised that last time they were on the show, I would have them on a live video stream so that people could be involved and ask questions. So who's that guest? Tune in next week to find out. Let's get back to some of these stories, shall we, Mr. Dennis?
Sure.
It's all right for me to call you that, Mr. Dennis.
Well, and unless you're subpoenaing.
Hey, I'm never peening you in any way,
yeah, right.
Sub well, or yeah. or above. Hey, there's the new movie series on Netflix, Fear Street. Mm-hmm. We just watched Fear Street Part 1, which takes place in the 90s. I think it was like 1994 or 1995. And it's got a very Scream feel to it. Mm-hmm. I like it. I thought it was a great little series. They're doing it three movies. One movie a week is being released on Netflix. And this is part of R.L. Stein's books, I guess.
Okay.
The first one was from the 1990s. The second one is Fear Street Part 2, 1978. Mm-hmm. Camp Nightwing. And this has a very Jason Voorhees vibe and feel to it. You can tell they definitely have some love for the original slasher genre movies.
Okay.
I really enjoyed the first one on Fear Street. I'm looking forward to watching the second one, which came out last week. The third one will be coming out this week. And I think that takes place in the 1600s.
Hmm.
But I digress. Fear Street Part 2, 1978, Camp Nightwing filming location has a real haunted history, according to this article. Netflix Fear Street slasher films have been Googling their film locations and digging to find out whether these stories are based on reality. The movies are complete adaptations of R.L. Stein's imaginative books, but some of the Georgia filming locations have their own folklore attached to them. Now, I do want to say this, Tim. R.L. Stein is known for his Goosebumps books, which are kid books.
Yeah.
These movies are not kid friendly.
Okay.
They're gruesome. They're violent. There's plenty of cursing. So it's just like our radio show without the gruesome violence, Tim.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Gratuitous curse words and such.
Yeah.
But an example of this haunted areas is Camp Nightwing in Fear Street Part 2, 1978. The real campsite where filming took place has been known for spooky occurrences and hauntings. The Fear Street team shot much of its footage for the trilogy in Metro Atlanta, but they headed to a rural Georgia town for part two. Rutledge is located just a little over 50 miles outside of Atlanta with a population of approximately 1,000. Camp Nightwing gay fans total Friday the 13th vibes when its bloody and brutal story about the Burmans and the supernatural slaughter that rained down on all those poor campers. Fear Street Part 2, 1978, was filmed at Camp Rutledge in Hard Labor Creek Park, State Park. The camp has been open since the mid-1900s, and the park is actually home to another camp where Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives, was shot, Crystal Lake and all. For years, campers and locals have asserted that a playful little boy haunts Camp Rutledge. He's known for laughing, leaving wet footprints, and toying around with a red ball. Some have said that he rolls the ball towards people and then giggles. One witness reported that a little boy peeked out from behind a tree before disappearing. Ghost Hunters did an investigation at the site in an episode that aired in 2012 titled Camp Fear. Jason Hawes and the TAPS team visited the camp where a groundskeeper said he worked at the park for almost 30 years. And there have been drownings at the lake. Ghost Hunters could not find a reasonable explanation for wet footprints in the dining hall. Over the years, people have reported seeing and hearing an old man hanging in or around the cabins. And once, he told someone they would die there. A woman who interviewed with Ghost Hunters said she was once touched by a spirit. I put my hand on him, and my hand sunk in. It was warm and dense air. I could feel that it was not a person, she said. She's been visiting the campgrounds since childhood. Others claim to see odd shadows in the woods or hear crashing sounds. Team TAPS trekked into the woods where they saw weird lights among the trees and caught a strange voice on audio equipment. They explained that there is likely paranormal activity happening at the campsite, but none of it is malicious, according to the Ghost Hunters team. If the entities wanted to cause harm, they would have by now. Camp Rutledge is still the topic of lore and considered one of Georgia's most haunted locations, thanks to its old buildings and scary stories. Check it out in Fear Street Part 2, 1978 on Netflix, or visit the real life camp during your next visit to Georgia. Georgia. You know what? I do love the Friday the 13th movies, Tim, except for Jason Takes Manhattan.
Yeah.
I've been a fan. As a matter of fact, I even like the reboot movie they did. I think I'm going to power through watching those with my kids now that they're older and teenage years, and it'll show them the dangers of smoking weed and having unprotected sex. There's always a chance you'll be killed by a hockey mask wearing psychopath. And because we're friends with Kane Hodder, I might just have him show up in the costume just to put the fear of God into my children. Is that a bad thing, Tim? Does that make me a bad guy?
Yes.
Am I a bad guy for doing that, Tim?
Yes, you're a terrible father for doing that, but
take a look at the bad guy, Tim. Take a look at the bad guy.
Oh, my God.
What?
It's horrible.
What? Oh, it's perfectly fine to have Uncle Chick dressed in red jacket and hat and white beard placing presents under a tree at specific times of the year, but having Kane Hodder show up with a machete and threaten my children if they have sex or smoke weed, that's bad.
Well, one is cute and cuddly and gets rid of all the carbs in the house, and the other is showing up with dangerous implements of death, and something bad could happen. So I see the difference.
You are just unbelievable. Hey Dave, I'm a student from India, although a fan of yours. Earlier, it makes it sound like, well, believe it or not, I'm a student and somehow I'm a fan of yours.
He's very smart, and he's lowered himself to our level. So, right. I'm seeing the correlation.
It's funny. Earlier, I have some sort of interest in paranormal activities, but as I started my research, I'm more curious to know about more. And sometimes I feel someone who closely watches me when I was in my room, but I ignored it, saying that it was just a myth. On a second note, I want to know more of it. So what do you think I should do to avoid such myths? Your fan from India, Bhaskar, I think is it, a B-H-A-S-K-A-R. I'm sorry if I mispronounced that. I apologize. First of all, thank you and welcome. And I know we've got a lot of fans in India that listen to the show. The show is actually, Tim has found a way to help stream it over in India.
There's a couple of different apps, that we're on in India. Yep.
That's pretty cool. Yep. Bhaskar, I'll say this. It's common sense. If you feel like something's watching you and there's reasons for it, you know, you can also get a EMF reader to see if any of the electronics in your house might be leaking high levels of EMF, electromagnetic force or field. That can give one the sense that they're being watched or felt, you know, that there's that paranoia that comes with it. If you don't find anything like it, I can't just tell you to summarily dismiss that you're dealing with supernatural forces, but that would be the first one. But a lot of it's common sense. Do your research, do your due diligence, look into the location, see if you can uncover, were there any deaths associated with that? Sometimes it's just in by addressing the spirits. I'm here. Let me know if there's something I can do to help you. If you are not a friendly spirit or you mean me harm, you do not have authority to touch me or communicate with me. And just that simple. But keep studying and keep looking into it and keep listening to the best in paranormal podcasting. And thank you for listening to the show. We appreciate that, my friend.
Absolutely.
I like when we make new friends in other countries, Tim.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Occasionally there's a, you know, we have a back page to the podcast and I'll take a look at the different countries that we broadcast to, and it's kind of cool. Yeah.
Very cool. Hey, let's do this. Let's turn down the lights, Tim. Mm-hmm. Let's snuggle up together underneath a blanket.
All right.
Let's sip out of my little cup of hot cocoa as we enjoy this, our new edition of Theater of the Mind. Today's Theater of the Mind comes from Melanie Gordon, for whom the bell tolls. I'm Melanie, or Mel as people call me. I'm 43 and I live in Lancashire, which is in the northwest of the United Kingdom. I've always had an interest in the supernatural and the unexplained. Growing up, I remember my granddad, a World War II veteran and psychiatric nurse, having collections of books by such people as Harry Price and Eric Von Daniken, which I still have today. Obviously, curiosity started by looking at the black and white photographs in such books and eventually led me to reading a lot of these type of stories. I come from a hard-working, down-to-earth family. My father was a long-distance truck driver, my sister works in care, and I myself am a senior psychiatric nurse of over 20 years experience. So we're not the type of people prone to fantasy or imagination. Despite this, my sister has encountered spirits, and my father, like many truckers, has had his fair share of strange events and encounters during those long pre-dawn hours on the roads. However, this story is not about them. It's about my own experience. So it was winter of 2020, just prior to lockdown, and myself and my partner, who shares my interest in the supernatural, decide to have a weekend break in the town of Blackpool, a seaside resort on the northwest coast of England. Part of this weekend break was to attend a ghost walk with a friend and paranormal investigator. He's run several events for many years in Blackpool, and we have done investigations with him at several local buildings using all kinds of equipment. But tonight was going to be a much more social event with a lighter atmosphere rather than a formal investigation. It's just after 8 p.m. when we meet up along the seafront near the tourist information booth. It's dark and the rain is coming down very heavily. The tide is in waves, choppy. The wind is blowing in off the North Sea, and I'm already regretting my poor choice of umbrella, which is trying to take off, and my even poorer choice of an outfit, as I tend to dress Victorian Gothic style, and my rather expensive floor-length satin skirt and petticoats, which trail the ground, are already soaking up the large puddles of water on the pavement. The weather is clearly a deterrent for all but the hardiest, or foolish, because that night, despite the bookings taken, only myself, my partner, and one other couple turned up. We spend about 2 hours walking through parts of the town that have ongoing reported phenomena and apparitions, which take place both during the day and at night. Rain continues to pour down like someone emptying a bottomless bucket. Wind continues to howl, and the five of us try to avoid the puddles as we splash, or more accurately, squelch through the streets and alleyways. Our host, who for the purpose of the tours dresses like a Victorian gentleman, is carrying a small case, and at points in the tour removes a couple of items from it, including a hand-ringing bell, as he talks about items sometimes having associations to the buildings and the phenomena within. Eventually, about 10:30 p.m., our host suggests we retire to the last building in the tour, which is now a pub. But although at that time unknown to us, it used to be a very old school. By this point, My clothes are absorbing water like a sponge from the floor, unless I hold them up in a very unladylike fashion. And the umbrella, which had given up being useful about a good hour since, had been deposited in the trash. So thoughts of a warm, dry pub and possibly a nice strong drink was more than welcome. So the five of us enter the pub. It's a typical British pub, warm and cozy, pumps for drought beer on the bar and pint glasses on the tables. There are only a few customers in tonight, and the jukebox is playing pop music at a fairly low sound level, allowing easy chat for the patrons. Bar staff are clinking drinking glasses as they clear up. The landlord happily chats with our host, passing small talk and conversation. After about 10 minutes, with us being such a small group, it's suggested that we go upstairs into one of the back rooms. If we were interested in taking part in a small experiment. But we all agree as anything is better than going back outside. The trip upstairs demonstrates just how old and huge the building is. As we go up the steps and along the corridors into areas not generally available to the public. The stairs are a mixture of concrete and wood. It's dusty and, in parts, clearly halfway through maintenance work, or just at a stage of disrepair. There are several rooms which we walk past, our shoes making echoes on the uncarpeted wooden floorboards as we walk. In one room, we can hear the music from a band practicing. Our host informs us that it's a local group who hired the room to practice and that we should not worry, as they won't disturb us. He's correct, as their musical guitars and drums fall to just a very low volume by the time we reach the room that we were going to. We enter the room. The door does not squeak, but it's very heavy and closes with a bang when closed. The room is about 25 feet square and has a fireplace, which I would expect dates from the mid to late 1800s along one wall and some shelving in the alcoves on either side. It has clearly been an apartment at some point, but certainly not for many years. The wooden floorboards are uncarpeted, and a small window looks out into the darkness of the wet and windy night. Inside the room is a small square table and a few dining chairs, but nothing else. The chairs are spread around the room haphazardly, and our host asks that because we have the advantage of being a small group, if we're interested in participating in a small seance. There's no pressure, but we all agree. And myself, my partner, and the other couple all pull up a chair to the table and attempt to get comfortable. Now, at this point, I have an admission to make. I'm really into the supernatural, and I've had my fair share of strange experiences. I've always said I believe in spirits and the afterlife, but if I'm honest, despite saying that, I still had that nagging doubt that maybe I was wrong and that it was just all imaginary. So I really did not expect anything to occur that night. We all sat down, and our host takes the hand-ringing bell out of his bag and places it in the center of the table. He tells us to examine it, examine the table and anything we like before we start, and adds that seances he holds do not always produce results, but we should all be open-minded. We're all told to hold hands with each other. I'm sat with my back to the door, the small window in front of me. My partner's on my left, and next to her is the husband of the lady that's on my right. Our host stands in full view of us and tells us to focus our thoughts and imagine our energy being directed at the bell. The bell is sitting in the middle of the table, and we all focus intently on it as our host begins. The room goes silent. If anyone is there, can you please ring the bell? A few seconds pass. If you are with us, please use our energy and try to ring the bell. A few more seconds pass, and then it happened. Absolutely nothing. The bell was about as dead as the feeling of numbness in my cold feet, although to be fair, I do not think any of us expected anything. A minute passes and our host suggests that we try something else. He picks up the bell and asks my partner to break hands with the gentleman on her left and hold the bell as still as possible over the table whilst we focus our energy. Rain pours down. It clatters against the window. Faint noises from the practicing band float down the corridor, and the four of us sit there focused. If anyone is here, please ring the bell. More silence. We will leave you alone. If you want, just give us a sign. More silence. Please use our energy. Try to ring the bell. And then it did happen. My partner was holding that bell completely still. It did not move in her hand, but at that moment, the piece inside of the bell went crazy, and that bell rang shattered the silence, stunning every single one of us into a kind of shock and making me glad I had not eaten anything that was dodgy that day. Do you want to talk to us? Nothing happened. Do you want us to leave you alone? And it happened again. That bell rang with such force, I thought it might break. I know there will be those that have doubts, those that will say it was rigged, but I assure you it was not. We inspected everything, and when that bell rang, my partner felt it ring. She felt the clang inside moving back and forth. We were told afterwards that the bell had a certain significance to the school and a headmaster, which, if I remember correctly, was meant to be the spirit in that room. What I know for certain is that wet, windy, and dark night in an old pub in Blackpool at the age of 42 was the night I really did start to believe and understand the paranormal is real. All right, Mr. Hansy. All right, Theater of the Mind's over. You just put your hands back in your own lap.
Oh, that wasn't mine?
No. I understand you get a little nervous in these dark situations with scary stories that you've helped create, Tim.
Well, I tend to do a decent job even to scare myself.
Hey, some of these stories are pretty creepy. Do you ever get, like, I know you work on these late at night. Do you ever get unnerved when you're working on them and hear things or sense that you're not alone?
Well, I do have the ghost downstairs here that I've told you about.
Yep.
Well, when he chimes in, then I know that I'm doing a good job.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very cool. Have you ever thought of just leaving your recording equipment on at night?
Actually, you want to hear an interesting story?
No, not at all. This is Darkness Radio. We don't have time for interesting stories.
Okay, well, then fine. Skip.
Yes, I want to hear an interesting story, you bubblehead.
The other night...
Wait, but I just channeled my inner Dr. Smith. You bubble-headed booby.
You bubble-headed booby.
The other night,
I'm sitting upstairs and I'm watching wrestling. Of course, I am 5 nights out of the week. But intern Yoko says, "Hey, what's going on with your studio down there?" And I said, "What do you mean?" She goes, "Well, I'm walking by your studio and your effects board is going off." I said, "What?" She goes, "Your effects board is going off."
So for listeners that don't know what an effects board is, Tim, can you give us a little example?
Yeah. So, okay. So I'll give you the perfect example, Dave.
Get back to the show now.
There you go.
Oh,
that's
my God.
That's my effects board. Okay.
That is, oh my God, that was so beautiful to hear. Play that one more time for me. That's little intern mini-me,
yeah.
Linus, who's now 19 and has a baby and married. Let me hear that again.
Okay.
Get back to the show now.
That's my effects board, right?
Right.
So as she's walking by, she hears,
"Get back to the show now."
All right. And she hears different things going off.
"I'm Bill Curtis, and I've just found the internet."
All right. She hears these different things firing off on my board. Now, see, what happens is my headphones are always plugged in, so they're hanging off my microphone. And she hears one sample after another being fired off. Now, this can be explained by different...
Weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
Different things can do this. Uh-huh, static uh-huh. electricity can hit the board and fire off these different soft buttons that I have on the right side of my board. that hold these samples. But it's just interesting that it got fired off that way. Now, what's interesting, too, is I have these programmed in a certain order, and that's not what's supposed to be on that board, on that button there. When I went to hit that button, that was supposed to be something else. But I'm glad that's the one that came up. But yeah,
well, I'm glad that happened as well, because I have not heard that. I haven't heard that drop in years, man. It's probably been about 8-9 years.
Yeah, I've been slowly putting in new samples into the board. So
I love it, because for our listeners, you know, my kids would sometimes come into the studio, and sometimes I'd have them do a book review or a movie review, or they just wanted to sit there and listen to stories. And Linus was there, and Tim and I got off on some rant. And I said, did you want to say something? And Linus said this.
Get back to the show now.
Yeah, because we were off base.
Yep.
Wow. Man, that makes my heart happy to hear. That's so cool. I'll have to tell him to listen to this episode. It's probably the last time he's listened to an episode when he was on it. But that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's weird, though. It's firing up. But maybe you should just crack your mic and like let it run for the night and see if you get any weird voices or... You know, what if you hear the ghost on there's like, hey, I'm Barry and this is Darkness Radio mocking us. I don't know.
Well, see, the thing is this mic, you can hear it sometimes. It has processing on it. So I would have to take the processing off to see if it would come through unfiltered. But it might. I mean, you might get something that comes through.
I think you should try it. I think you should do it one night. Just throw it open and let it record. But it, like when you're in bed, so you're not picking up TV sounds in the background or anything like that. And just, or when you and in turn Yoko go out to run your errands and, you know, go through your gold mine and dig out some new nuggets. So,
yeah, I don't know.
I might, but the
thing was firing off randomly. Now that, like I said, the TV is turned on by itself in the other room a couple of times. Mm-hmm. I've heard footsteps walk by my studio as I've been walking here or working, and I've had the door open and nothing's been there.
Crazy.
And he's come up and, you know, I like literally when I'm done recording here, I'll have to, you know, I have an iPad that I work mm-hmm. with that I fire off, you know, audio samples with at times. And, I'll put it on to sports programming just so he's a happy camper while I'm working.
How about this? I'm going to throw this thought at you, buddy. Mm-hmm. So here, let me roll up a fatty and let's both just take a quick hit. What if, Tim, because this ghost likes sports, mm-hmm. this ghost like your board and seems to know its way around your board. What if it's you from the future after you've passed away? What if it's you coming back to visit these moments in time and just for old time shits and grins, you're punching up buttons on the old soundboard?
Huh? I don't know, because he seems to be interactive.
Right. That's right. Maybe it's you interacting with you, being you while interacting with you. I'm just saying, something to consider. Now pass the Cheetos and please get your hand out of my lap. The Conjuring universe is currently one of the most successful cinematic shared continuities, featuring several successful spinoffs and sequels, helping to bring interest back to the morbid-bound horror genre. That's what this article says. The series retells the cases of real-world paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren. Real world! Each film, many of which are on HBO Max, notes that it's inspired by these real life but controversial cases, making the horror that much more terrifying. Beyond the Conjuring movies, there are several other classic horror flicks which also delve into the Warren's most chilling, hair-splitting, supernatural cases. Here's a look at the movies and how they connect to situations portrayed in the Conjuring universe's series of scares. These are our Conjuring Ed and Lorraine cases that have never yet been made into part of the Conjuring universe, Tim. Of course, probably the most iconic of all, the first film to... you know, bring a case dealt with the Warrens to the big screen was the 1979 classic, The Amityville Horror, mm-hmm. starring James Brolin and Margot Kidder as George and Kathleen Lutz. The couple purchases an old house and are soon victimized by a series of increasingly devilish supernatural happenings. These stem from a murder which took place years before, in which an entire family was killed. based off the late 70s book, which claimed to recount these same real life events. The Warrens are connected in that they were the first to investigate the horrific events that took place at the Amityville house. These events are portrayed in the opening scene of The Conjuring 2. Then The Haunting in Connecticut story. Now, that was a movie, of course, but it wasn't part of the Conjuring universe. 2009's The Haunting in Connecticut features a fictional story that jumps off a supposedly true event. In it, the Campbell family moved to a house which was once used as a mortuary. Unfortunately for them, their sick son, they soon move, come under siege from a series of traumatic and gruesome developments, and the child becomes the focus of these attacks. The movie's low budget allowed it to become a box office success, spawning a sequel with an unrelated plot line, which was so stupid. It was Haunting in Connecticut 2, Ghosts of Georgia.
Yeah, yeah.
That never made sense. It could have just been Haunting in Georgia, but they went with Haunting in Connecticut 2, Ghosts of Georgia. There's not even a connection there.
No.
The story is based off the experiences on the original movie of the Snedeker family, who moved into the former funeral home that was the site of supposed necromancy. After this, actually, I don't think it was necromancy. I mean, that's trying to communicate with ghosts. I thought that the original claims were that there was, what's the sex with dead people? Necrophilia.
Necrophilia.
That's what it was about. Yeah. After this took place in 1986, the Warrens investigated, sensing incredibly powerful paranormal energies surrounding the area. As with most of their cases, however, this one was especially disputed, with many stating that the acts of the Snedekers claimed to have transpired were entirely fabricated. These accusations only increased after Ed Warren's death, with some coming out and saying the paranormal investigator told them to essentially make things up to the press for sensation's sake. Now, we actually had the author of that book on the show who also made that claim that that he, you know, Ed and Lorraine hired a horror novelist to write the account of their examination. And when the author, and this, again, not my words, folks, this is the author himself. When the author would say, well, you know, what happened? And he'd tell him, he goes, okay, well, that's, you know, there's not much meat on that. And he said, well, you're the author. Go write something scary. And that's his alleged claim. So that is part of it. The Haunted now is the third movie that was a 1991 made-for-TV film, and most notable for actually featuring Ed and Lorraine Warren. It's based off the book of the same name, which itself recounts the haunting experience by the Smurl family. And we've talked to the Smurl family on the show in the past. Moving into a house on Chase Street, the family is haunted by a trio of ghosts as well as a demon turning their lives into a living hell. They're finally aided by none other than the Warrens, who were portrayed by Stephen Markle and Diane Baker. The movie was very well received, earning Golden Globe nominations for both its cinematography and Sally Kirkland's portrayal of Smurl matriarch Sally. Sadly, it and its story are also highly contested, turning its validity into controversial horror story in its own right. Neither the Smurl nor the Snedeker hauntings have been adapted yet in the Conjuring series. But with the movies still incredibly popular, these cases could possibly possess the franchise in upcoming sequels. I don't think we'll ever see the Haunting in Connecticut case. It may be another one of those where, like, they're leaving the case at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
Like they did with Amityville.
Yep.
Maybe the Smurl haunting. And I don't here. I got to fight that one. Them saying that that was highly contested. Of course, every haunting is highly contested. But the Smurl haunting is really creepy in the fact that many neighbors and people would have experiences. As a matter of fact, neighbors would call the police. They knew that the Smurls would be out of town and there would be activity and lights going on and off. The cops would show up. Nobody would answer the door. They had a lot of strange experiences that go beyond just the family making claims.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's crazy. So those are the other movies that maybe we'll get a chance to see. I'm still waiting for the werewolf movie and Satan's Harvest, the Frenchie story that they allude to in The Nun, I think.
Yeah.
I read that book, Satan's Harvest, probably 20 years ago. Scared the hell out of me. What a weird book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our final story of the day. Haunted visitors to Merseyside Barracks witness a ghost of a woman named Claire. Haunted visitors to a Merseyside Barracks witnessed a ghost of a woman named Claire. An ancient Merseyside Barracks is claimed to be haunted by a three-legged dog and other spirits. It was previously named as one of the UK's most frightful sights. Mill Street Barracks in St. Helens was modified for use by the local Sea Cadet Detachment, but it has since become a well-known location for ghost sightings and paranormal activity. It was built in 1861, right around the time this show started, Tim. It was to house a variety of army formations and used as a morgue during both world wars. Following a survey by paranormal website Higgy Pop, it was included in the top 100 most haunted places in the UK in both 2019 and 2020. In Sainsbury, an 8-year-old girl collapsed and had a cracked head, and her mother couldn't understand the staff's reaction. The property is said to be haunted by the ghost of the former caretaker's dog, Bruce. A three-legged dog named Bruce, Tim. It served as an isolation facility for tuberculosis patients following World War I, with many of them dying there. Visitors to the barracks have reported hearing footsteps, marching, echoing yells, and voices, as well as seeing the ghost of a lady known simply as Claire. Simply Ghost Nights, a professional ghost hunting group, was granted permission to investigate the drill hall, bunk chambers, and infamous cellars in 2016. According to The Echo, a guy named Jack is one of the most often reported ghosts and is renowned for pestering female guests on the higher floors. I don't have an answer for that. Oh, sorry about that, Echo. I didn't mean to engage you. Please turn off. They're always listening.
Always.
Doom, doom, doom. Doom. Doom, 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 doom. Others have claimed to have spotted the angry man who has been accused of slamming individuals against the walls in buildings' old lodging block. We can put out a call on social media for residents to share their most terrifying and unsettling stories about the military barracks. The article goes on to say, we spent 3 nights with a paranormal team. I didn't see anything and was upset, but reportedly there's a three-legged dog in there, and there's a set of stairs where many people have seen and have been thrown down. According to Sammy Janie Donahue. Spent time there overnight as a teen in the Sea Cadets, Joey Happy Pants Hardman said. The summary comes to a close after that, Tim. That's a hell of a name, Joey Happy Pants Hardman.
Interesting nickname.
Yeah, it's a good name. I like it. I like it a lot. Yeah.
I got one note before leave. Sure. Yeah. Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff passed away at 71 this week. The first opponent of Hulk Hogan in the first WrestleMania.
Yeah.
You remember the Heenan family? Bobby Heenan had a stable that he
Bobby the Brain Heenan. Yeah.
Yep, the famous manager.
Yep.
An interesting note that Tommy Dreamer, former ECW original, brought up online. Every single member of the Heenan family has now passed away. There were seven of them, including Bobby Heenan, and they're in this order: Big John Studd, Ravishing Rick Rude, and Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig, both from the Minneapolis area. Of course, Bobby the Brain Heenan, King Kong Bundy, and Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, of course, this last week. And then, of course, the eighth wonder of the world, Andre the Giant. All of those great men are now all gone. So just this reminder, all of our childhood heroes seem to be disappearing. They all seem to be going on to their reward in the great beyond. So just remember to hug your loved ones tightly this week and just keep those great heroes in mind and remember that time is short.
Amen, brother. Amen. All right, folks, that's it for this week. Thanks for tuning in and spending some time with us here on the Darkness on the Edge of Town. We'll be back tomorrow, Tim. Tomorrow is a day that we're going to share with a guest. And the guest that we're going to be talking with, I'm filling time as I'm trying to pull up the computer information here again, Tim, because I'm horrible at...
Rodney Davies?
Yes, Rodney Davies. And we're going to talk about time slip phenomena. So that's tomorrow, Time Slips, Journeys into the Past and Future with Rodney Davies. So make sure you tune in and check that show out tomorrow. And then I will be back.
Go ahead. I'll just put it underneath you.
I'll be back next week. I'm leaving Thursday again. Tomorrow night, well, tonight, we're recording on Tuesday. Wednesday, the show is released. I will be at Bruce Springsteen on Broadway. Wish me well. Get a chance to meet him, hopefully. Thursday, off to the Belvoir Winery for the Haunted Oddfellows Asylum event. Again, tickets are at darknessevents.com. Click on the Haunted in Havana Nights banner And you can join us. I think there's 10 tickets that still remain if you're listening and in that vicinity and would like to come on out and meet all of us. And I'll be back Monday, and we'll be back recording with all brand new episodes for next week and a new live episode next week as well. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. You've been listening to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is the one, the only, the original, accept no imitations. This is Darkness Radio.